Welcome to RPG Ramblings with Jeff Jones. This is a weekly show exploring the various details of the tabletop RPG hobby through discussions with interesting people. Today, Adam Kovac, writer and editor, joins me, and we discuss Scoundrels, a project that we worked on together. After a few minutes of talking to Adam, I realized he does a lot better job explaining this project and conveying to the core of this supplement than I ever do. The project went live on the 18th, and it will last for 3 weeks and 2 days, and this was recorded the week prior. So, if the project sounds great to you, head over to the show notes and click the link to become a backer, or just Google Scoundrels of Brixton on Kickstarter. Hey, the gig's up. We need to scramble. Sisters and brothers, it is time to get rambling. Hello, Adam.
Hey, Jeffrey.
I heard we were involved in a project.
Yeah, I know. It's great to be back on the podcast to talk about it.
Yeah, it's great having you on. We've been co-conspirators in this felony that we're, or maybe this heist that we're trying to. I guess we shouldn't say that. Maybe it looks like we're pulling a con job. But yeah, we got the Scoundrels of Brixton coming up for Kickstarter.
I know it's super cool. It's exciting. It didn't start out that way though, did it?
No. You know what's funny is not everybody gets to peek behind the curtain of what's behind my curtain as far as quote unquote process. You're right. It was not that in the beginning.
No. Why don't you tell people, man? Because I don't think people realize how this thing the seed got planted and then I ended up being one of the major gardeners. In this thing.
Yes, and Shepherd, I would say too, herder of the cats known as Jeff. So the Scoundrels of Brixton it started out with Scoundrels, and the idea really was to kind of do a game combined science fiction and crime. And so or at least a criminal element. It seems like it's kind of interesting. I had these Facebook ads going, and somebody posted, like, why do we need this? There's already crime. I can't remember how this person put it. But basically, like, there's already crime in the game. You know, like, actually, well, not really. I think a lot of characters will go that direction. A lot of games go that way. But like, say, Traveler or Cephas Engine, a lot of these games, they have the possibility for doing crime, but they're not really structured in a way to really funnel that type of experience. In fact, if you look at a lot of the characters that are when you roll them up, they can really be they can do a lot of different things. But there's nothing really to indicate that these people are involved in crime. I think the Pirates of Drynax is privateering. Which is kind of is a crime, but you know, this is actually something where it's more gritty, more personal, I guess is the way I would look at it. And so the idea of the Scoundrels of Brixton, you wouldn't even call that at the time. In fact, I think we owe the title to you to finally firming that thing down. But the idea was to do that. Now the setting itself, it lends itself to a lot of other types of styles of game, but really what we're kind of focusing on right now is that. But originally I was going to do it more as a general zine and not do the setting, kind of do set pieces. But I think you kind of said that's the way of folly.
You know, one of the things that really, really, you know, piqued my interest in this project is when you started talking about Scoundrels and I looked at the Scoundrels zine, it wasn't so much the crime elements within the content. It was the what was left unsaid, the this whole Brixton system, this sky city, this floating metropolis above a planet that's just being squeezed dry, and the governments and key players that kind of held everything together that was really, really fascinating. And I really dug the, just the little hints that you had dropped. And I saw a lot of opportunity to like flesh that out and take it and run with it. It's not so much that, oh, this Scoundrels of Brixton, this is a role-playing game supplement about crime. There's lots of that everywhere, but it's the actual system that you've developed, this Brixton system, this idea of this environment, this setting that makes the crime come to life. It brings these nefarious elements, you know, out up from under the soil, you know, like a zombie hand coming out of the grave. And I was really, really into that. And I remember, for a lot of people probably don't know, Jeffrey, you know, hired me to create a criminal gang and an element, a faction, so to speak, of non-player characters, you know, operating on this technological marvel of Sky City floating above the planet Diluvia, the main planet in the Brixton system, which I did, and I dug it, and you know, I sent it back, and Jeffrey liked it, and then he asked me to take a look at some of the other stuff that he had, and there were all these great ideas. They just needed to kind of be tied together and sorted out. So it was a real thrill to and a privilege to be able to kind of take that and just run with it, you know. And I was just like, just give me this stuff. Just give me all these ideas in your head, and I will untangle these knots and try to, you know, inject some life into this, which was basically just an idea, a little fragment taken out of the larger Scoundrel zine. So when people ask, you know, oh, why do I need this? I have Scoundrels. I have this first supplement that RPG Ramblings created. You know, what do I need Scoundrels of Brixton for? Well, Scoundrels is the, I guess, the mechanics of a lot of things, but Brixton's the actual world that it's created. And I'll give you an example. When Traveler came out, right, in the late 70s and early 80s, you know, you just had the little black books. You just had the rules, and it was such a huge open sandbox. And it was somewhat intimidating for those who remember, you know, playing the game in its infancy. And gradually, like, little modules came out. You know, you had, like the Anak Nova and Death Station and all these other little adventures that you could play. But there was still no real fleshed-out world. And it wasn't until the Third Imperium setting came out, and it almost established borders of the space that you're working with, and governments, and a hierarchy of just how life actually is within the Traveler universe. And then you kind of, as a player, I know for myself, then I was like, okay, now I'm kind of rooted in something. I have like a little place to begin and a framework from which to operate within, to play within, and the same as a referee. And so that's what Scoundrels of Brixton does. That's what this zine really kind of does, is it takes all the crime stuff that was in Scoundrels and it gives it a home. It gives it a home, and you wouldn't even need the first Scoundrels. You could just pick up straight with Scoundrels of Brixton, and you're inserted into this really gritty setting, this environment with a lot of rich lore and background and details about certain, you know, certain characters and key players, be they individuals or be they like a shady banking firm. Or you know, a company that's just milking this little settlement dry for every credit it can, and that's what it really does. The Scoundrels of Brixton, SD1, setting Diluvia under a hard sun. It's like the soil in which the seed goes into, and you can't really have one without the other. So yeah, I think people are gonna take a look at this once the Kickstarter launches and they can actually see more details about the content and what they're getting. I think it's going to interest a lot of people.
Yeah, I think you do. I think you do a better job of summarizing than I do, Adam. So I think exactly kind of what you're saying is like, it, even though we do focus on a planet, there is it is, and even on a kind of even somewhat smaller scale, there's a structure set that goes further out. Like, this isn't all happening in a vacuum. There's a reason why everything's the way it is, and why people are the way they are, and why these institutions exist, and why these people are doing the things they're doing. So it isn't in a vacuum, and it does provide ways of exploring, basically a setting that is really kind of in a, I'm not sure exactly how to put it, but it's not a governmental system where everything's good. There are definite problems.
Oh, absolutely. And this, you know, we are only limited under a hard sun. This first issue, that's what it is. It is a first issue. It is a launch pad. It is in no way limited to just the planet of Diluvia or just the city above it, Sky City. We're simply limited because of the page count, the number of pages that we can afford to put in one issue. And, you know, there's already two other issues in development, with the possibility for, and I'm just kind of spitballing here, at least 10 other issues.
Oh yeah.
Seeding out from this, this initial, you know, Scoundrels of Brixton zine. So yeah, what people are going to get is content that's not only interesting, but it's usable. And it's just really the beginning of something a lot more, in terms of not only adventure scenarios, different planets, different crime organizations, different government organizations, all with their own unique history and moral dilemmas spinning off from that. So I'm really excited about this. You know, if I was still in the newspaper business, if I was still in journalism, we would say this is a story that has legs. This is a project that has legs. It's going someplace. The only thing that's really required is that the project gets funded.
Yes,
and,
that is.
And the more it gets funded, the more options that are available, not only to create more content, but to hire additional contributors to bring their own flavor and vision on board, additional artists. I foresee for the next edition, or possibly the one after that, more detailed like maps, interiors of derelict spaceships, pirate bases on an abandoned, you know, on a rogue asteroid, various abandoned mining facilities on the planet Diluvia, alien ruin sites on the planet Unov. I mean, there's just a lot of there's a lot of cool things in this environment that you've created, Jeff, in Brixton. I don't know where you get your ideas from, man, but they're fun to work with, and you've got a lot of interesting. Concepts and things to bring to someone's gaming table.
Well, actually, I think a fair amount really is taken from real world situations, and so it's like kind of looking at the British with what's happened with India and with Africa, with the Europeans, various other like historical type of situations. I'm kind of able to kind of bring together, put in a fictional aspect where it's not too on the nose. So I think that's, but what's really helped develop it was actually, when I started this, I had Sky City, I had Diluvia, I had some systems written up, but then I thought, you know, if I want somebody to actually write for this, I need to come up with some sort of writer's guidelines. I thought, when I have writer's guidelines, I need to be developing this a whole lot more. So I just started typing. I went to the fugue state.
One of the cool things about Scoundrels of Brixton and this series of zines that RPG Ramblings is developing is that you talk about, like, what do you do with it? What's it used for? A referee could start in Brixton and stay in the Brixton system. But one of the things that I saw its usefulness for is, in my experience playing role-playing games, especially in a long-standing campaign, where you've got a group of people who've been playing for a while, you've got a referee who's been running things, and sometimes it's a homebrew stuff, sometimes it's just like a series of modules that the referee is running. You know, we talk about Dungeons and Dragons, you've got you know, they could be running all those modules like Slave Pits of the Undercity, and then or in Traveler you could be running High and Dry and then something else with some of Mongoose products. But in every campaign there's a point where the referee runs out of material or needs time to develop new material. Scoundrels of Brixton is perfect to fill that gap. There and comes time, we talk about, I'm going to use Traveler just as an example because it's Cepheus engine compatible, so it's very homebrew Traveler ish. But say there's a misjump. Say you're a referee is running an adventure and has a miss, the characters roll a misjump in their starship. What do you do? I mean, maybe the referee doesn't roll that they've had some kind of catastrophic event and they're all dead and we have to re-roll right. New characters. Maybe they've just vanished in jump space and they appear somewhere else. And the referee on the fly, with very minimal preparation, just having even skimmed through Scoundrels of Brixton, can just drop and load their characters right into that setting and just pick up the action from there. The ship emerges from jump space. You're in an unknown charted star system. Your sensors start to pick up all these other things. There's a giant starport 17 hours away. Characters, let's head there because we need fuel, blah, blah, blah. Boom, welcome to Sky City.
Yeah,
please place your hands on top of your head. You're under arrest, you know, and bang, they're right there in it. And, you know, you mentioned Pirates of Drynax earlier. You know, a lot of people run the Drynax campaign, and you've got characters. Not everybody runs Drynax as or plays in the Pirates of Drynax campaign as a straight up bloodthirsty pirate. In fact, that's probably the best, the fastest way to start rerolling new characters, because you're not going to survive long. So not everybody plays that full tilt as a villain. There's elements of having to be a bit of a do-gooder. And so Scoundrels of Brixton, the Brixton system, you know, gives you the opportunity, both referees and players, to do a little of both. You can be a bit of a villain. You could be a hero trying to right the wrongs of that the man has brought down on the people, the common person, you know? So there's a lot of different ways to play out scenarios, which we have been providing in the booklet.
Oh yeah.
Awesome. By the way, for referees to play this out, you know, in a lot of the adventure scenarios, you could help the evil corporation or street gang, or you could choose to help the so-called victim in the situation, just depending on the character's personalities and how the referee wants to depict a lot of the NPCs which are there, which again there's like 20, you know, playable NPCs to choose from. So it's got a lot of uses. I know people are probably like, what do we do with this? Well, why should we plunk down the money on this? It looks cool. But there's a lot of possibilities in this and within this world of Brixton and the planet Diluvia and whatnot.
Yeah, I think there's also the opportunity through the descriptions. Each NPC has a description, kind of give their motivations and also puts them in line with the other people in their factions. And even the factions we've given plot hooks or adventures. Missions, I guess, is what we called them. And they may, you know, these are these groups, these factions, these gangs You may be, you may align with them. They may be patrons, or maybe you're doing jobs against them. And it's really, it can go a lot of ways.
Yeah. You know, and I, when doing a lot of the writing and especially with the NPCs for this issue, you know, I'm an author by trade. I write fiction. So, you know, characters is everything. It's key to crafting a story that resonates with the readers. So when I was crafting a lot of these NPCs, you know, I tried to put some emphasis on who they are and develop them so that they're what's called a rounded character. They want something. They dislike something. They have needs. They have a goal. You know, it's no different than when rolling up a player character that you're going to play. You know, you can roll up a character, like say a fighter in Dungeons and Dragons, and say, well, here's my character, here's my stats, and here's my equipment, and let's just go out and adventure, and I want to kick ass and get gold. Lots of gold, all the gold and magic stuff. And that's cool. It's fun. But I've found that, you know, role-playing since the 80s, that the characters come to life at the gaming table if they have a desire. What do they really want? Where do they come from? Why do they do the things that they do? Something beyond the descriptions of their, you know, say Dungeons and Dragons, their alignment. And the same is true in games like Traveller and other, you know, homebrew sci-fi. If your characters want something other than just to go roam around the galaxy and do stuff, if they know what they want, it tends to be a little more of an enjoyable experience at the table, not only for the player, but the fellow players and the referee and whatnot. So when I was creating these NPCs, most of whom are just, well, for lack of a better word, scoundrels in this scene, I tried to incorporate that as best as I could, while still being economical with the amount of space. You know, I didn't, you know, we limited the descriptions of NPCs, I believe, to like around 80 words a piece, you know, and so everything's very concise. And that's not only true with the NPCs, but just even the history and the just the descriptions of the different settlements on this planet and some of the bits of lore. And going back with the characters, you know, you also want to display their personality in the stats that you generate for them. I mean, you can just roll dice and pick a bunch of skills and assign skill values, skill levels to them. But is that going to act, how does that mesh with the background that you've created for the character? You know, like, for example, like a criminal who is in a gang that specializes in drug trafficking. Well, this NPC is probably going to know things about chemistry.
Right.
He's probably going to know about chemistry. If it's a guy who collects weird artifacts, weird archaeology finds, and likes to keep them in his private museum, he's probably going to know about these things. So he's going to have, you know, certain skills that would reflect his interest in antiquities. You know, you can't just, everybody just doesn't have, you know, all these different levels of gun combat and melee combat and whatnot. There's little nuggets within each of the non-player characters that jibe with their needs, their wants, their personality. So it's really cool. It was nice to be able to do that, to actually kind of take a deep dive into so many different, you know, criminal elements. And there's a few sort of good guys in there. Yes. but it's a project with a lot. It's compact and concise, but it's got some meat to it. You know, it's like a little shepherd's pie, you know, that you could get.
Yeah.
It's packed with the meat and potatoes.
Yeah, it was definitely very noticeable, because a number of the NPCs I've written up earlier on, you're able to take those descriptions And it's very obvious that you took a lot of things in consideration, age and skill. So it really something I could not have done. I would not have had the thoughtfulness and thoroughness that you did. So it definitely shines when you look at those characters that it made a big difference. I think, like you said, you made sure that the nuances are there. So you have the description, but the nuances are also there in the skills as well.
I tried. I think referees and players, you know, alike are gonna see that once they get their hands on the issue, this first issue.
Yeah, I think so too. And definitely, you know, it's definitely helped having someone like you, well, not like you, but having you on board, because it definitely helped hone this to be a much sharper blade than it would have been.
There's no one like me, baby. There's no one.
Yeah, I really appreciate the it's kind of funny too. It's like, you know, I guess it is sort of a sort of relationship, but it's kind of interesting, you know, we're kind of both learning about each other as we're going through this process, and it has been kind of fun. So and especially I think the things that you find I find out about myself through you even more funny.
Well, I've been, you know, it's I like I said, I appreciate the opportunity to come along on board on this project. You know, I've been writing for, you know, role-playing games for a little while now, trying to kind of break into that. So this is, you know, going to be my first, actual published, product within role-playing game writing. So it was really cool to get the offer to come in, you know, at first on a small scale and then, on a more role with a lot more responsibility, but it's we found a way to kind of work with each other. I mean, I'm okay with you just sending me notes and then untangling them and refining them and fleshing them out and making it a little more concise, and then adding little elements that might be missing or overlooked. So I think we as our relationship might be pretty new, you know, what, it's about a year now. You know, we work well together. We know how to make this kind of thing fit, which is, you know, it's like a gaming table. I mean, you know, I people come together, you know, especially on Roll20, you don't know a lot of the people that you play with sometimes.
Right.
And, you know, if you can get a good group, I mean, that's like a squirrel hoarding a nut, man. You've got to like really hang on to that, because it's rare to find.
And I think also it goes to show the importance of finding a good editor. And I don't know that maybe what you initially signed on obviously to do, but you definitely took on that role, and it's very hard to find. It's very hard. I've had problems finding people that are willing to like take charge of stuff and make clear stands and directions for clarity. A lot of times I've had some people, they just would just, all they're doing is just doing copy editing. It's like, well, I need more than that.
Yeah, I understand. And, you know, I mean, my not only, you know, am I an author, you know, I have had a background in journalism. I worked as a newspaper reporter for several years. So, you know, I understand the author, writer, editor relationship. And you make a good point. There is a big difference between a copy editor and an actual, you know, editor, a content editor. And, you know, writers can be a diva about certain things, and you know, creators like yourself, people in your position, you know, they need someone to stand up to them. They need to know when to stand up for certain parts of their work, and it's important for the editor and the creator to have that kind of relationship where you're not going to get offended by someone putting their foot down. you know what is what's worth maybe just letting go, and what needs to really be fleshed out and sometimes tossed out and reworked. And it can be a little difficult to have that kind of objectivity when you're very close to a product. You know, if it's something that you create, you know, I mean, there's that saying, you know, kill your darlings. I mean, it might be this the best idea you have, and you may just love it, and it doesn't work, man. It doesn't work at all. It's awesome. It's super sexy, but it doesn't fit with what's going on right now at hand. And it may have to just be scrapped altogether. Or, you know, fortunately, Scoundrels of Brixton is a multi-issue project. So maybe it can go somewhere else, you know?
Oh, yeah, I definitely, you know, there's definitely a lot of directions this can go. But I think it goes to highlight, too, just for people out there, you know, it's easy to think. And the reason I've gotten by with it, because it, at least what I'm putting out, it's decent. It's just, you know, but it could be so much better. And if you can find a good editor, it's really worth taking that time. I just happened to, on you, I just, what happened was, I think you're trying to find somebody to pick up a Traveler Fiction. I'm just like,
yeah.
Like, I'm like, well, forget that. Why are you pitching to these people? Let's just do our own thing.
Yeah. I mean, and this is, it's super cool. It was very, very random how that kind of dropped out of the Twitterverse, into both of our laps, but Scoundrels of Brixton. Yeah. It's got, I guess I was saying, you know, it's got so much possibilities to go off in different directions and just expand upon what's already there. But fiction is also a definite avenue worth exploring, which I'm interested in doing. You could definitely write a short novel, a novella, or a series of stories based on this Brixton setting, this subsector with bunches of other systems, star systems, and this the political, socioeconomic dynamic of everything going on. Some of the NPCs that have already been created would make great characters in a narrative story. There's possibilities for new ones. It's just it's really exciting, this environment, this art role-playing game setting that you've created. And it's, like I said, it's a cool project. It's very exciting as a writer and developer to be a part of. And I'm really thinking some people are going to enjoy this thing once they start getting their copies in the mail, Kickstarter backers.
Yeah, that is the exciting part. But before before that happens, we got to go through the Kickstarter, which is the first time you've actually been on this other side of a Kickstarter.
Yeah, and it's driving me nuts, man. I don't know how you do it. I know we don't launch for another week and a few days, but. I'm just like, there's so many unknowns that I've never, never had to deal with, in such a thing. So I'm putting it, you put a lot of things in my hands during the writing and developing of this. And, you know, you're the old pro with Kickstarter. So I'm just kind of buckling up and letting you drive the shit, mm-hmm. man. And I hope we don't go off the cliff.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing. I'm not. Yeah, the old pro is I've been through. I think this is my sixth Kickstarter, but I'm still. I mean, you know, as you can see, it's like I being, you know, at least up to now, pretty much responsible for most things, and so. You know, and luckily I've hired World of Game Design. They help me through the Kickstarter. They provide graphics, but like this time I'm doing Facebook ads, which I did not. So that was something I started last time. So I've been working on that. So coming up the design for the ads and targeting markets. And so pretty much every Kickstarter, there's something new that I'm delving into that I'm unfamiliar with.
Well, you know, I mean, looking at your past, you know, projects, this one, you're knocking it out of the park. I mean, your past projects have all been backed and fully funded above goal. And I'm telling you, compared to them, this one is you are knocking it out of the park, not only in terms of content, but in terms of design, in terms of marketing and outreach and all that stuff. I mean, this is a very, very good product. It's you're not shortchanging your backers at all with this one. I mean, so you've definitely come a long way.
Yeah, and largely, I mean, still to go back to, I mean, one is obviously I am not a detail person, so having you go through and correcting mistakes is huge. Having Zach from a World of Game Design throwing down some graphics and help building some stuff up really worked out. I think I've also did new. Is I started doing short videos and attaching those. And that's, we'll see how that works out. But I think I'm probably the most prepared. This is probably the Kickstarter I'm the most prepared for of all of them.
I mean, it's already got excellent number of followers and the pre-launch stuff. I mean, I think the last I checked a couple hours ago was up to 118 people have clicked to notify me. And this has only been out there, you know, for a few days. So it's generating interest and it seems to be growing day by day as word spreads. So that's good. You know, other people are getting excited about this. And I know, you know, some of the people I know who run Homebrew Traveler are kind of chomping at the bit for this thing to go live because this is right up their alley. They run a lot of Homebrew Traveler. They incorporate little bits from, you know, Mongoose stuff and some of the original Little Black Book adventures, and they mix it all up into their own campaigns. So they're eager for more stuff like this to give their players something exciting and new. So it's really exciting so far. Just seeing the buzz kind of generate and the project page start to take shape slowly and slowly. You know, we've got, you know, hopefully there's some people do some reviews of the project on YouTube and, you know, some of the trade, online trade public magazines. So yeah, as this thing gets closer and closer to launch day, it's the buzz that's starting to spread out there is it's really nice to hear and it's exciting to kind of sit back and watch.
Yeah, and actually when we're actually recording in the past, so actually when this drops, the Kickstarter have already been launched. So right now what you're hearing is us 9 days before launch discussing the hopes and dreams and also the.
By the time anxiety. You listen to this, it's going to be 150% funded. I'm calling it right now. No.
Yes.
Who knows? Yeah. Like I said, I don't know. Like you said, this is my first Kickstarter. So you're the driver, man. You're the pilot.
Well, the thing is, what's hard is this is all speculation. Because I've never done a zine for the Traveler or Cephas Engine. So this is brand new territory. And so I really don't know what the market's like. And so
we'll find out.
We will find out. Yeah. So, you know, that's the thing. So, I dropped some change on, that O'Hara for the cover and, which is a beautiful cover.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's best money you've spent, man. Look at this. I mean, this is really good, man. Yeah, when I'm sitting here saying, "Oh, Jeff, you're putting a lot of work into this." I mean, compared to the other projects that you've done and funded, I mean, this is just off the chart good. You've got good inside and outside. I mean, the cover's not just gorgeous, but the interior stuff is just really good, and it's organized in a good way. It's logical. It flows. It reads well. So yeah, and like we already discussed, you know, here on this podcast, you know, there's a lot of different uses that you could get from this little zine. It packs a punch, and it's clean and it's elegant. So yeah, I'm excited to see, you know, how people respond to it, and hopefully, you know, we have the opportunity to give them more content, give people more of the Brixton system and the people that inhabit it.
Yeah. And really, you know, that's the thing with Kickstarters is, you know, when you back a Kickstarter, you're funding people to do this kind of work. And it's like a vote. So the more people who vote, it keeps things going along. So, you know, that's the thing. So if you see something you like, you want to see more of it, it's important, not just for me, but for other creators to fund it.
Yeah. I mean, and I've backed Kickstarters before too. I mean, there are projects that I thought were pretty cool, cool ideas, not novella projects, comic books. So yeah, I mean, I've been on the backing end of Kickstarter, but never on had the developers access.
Yes.
to the behind the scenes, you know, backstage pass. So
yeah. It's going to be a ride.
No, this is going to be good. I'm really confident. You know, no matter what the funding, however the Kickstarter shakes out in the end when it finally ends, you know, I know that you and I and the other artists and designers involved put together a solid project that can stand on its own with its head up. So. This is good.
It is, and so we will find out here shortly. But no, I do expect it to fund, and I'm not really worried about that. But just as any, maybe it's my nature too. But it's just hard to be. It's hard to shake the stress and the concern, even though it's like, yeah, I'm doing everything I can. It's all good.
I mean, having published a novel, I mean, you spend years writing the book. You spend a considerable amount of time finding an agent, a literary agent, and then you typically work with the agent, make some more corrections and more revisions, and then finally the agent starts sending it out to publishers, and you just wait and wait and wait and wait, and you get rejection after rejection after rejection, and then finally, you know, hopefully the book. The novel sells, and then you almost start that all over again. You go through revision and design and layout stuff, and you're going through proof copies, and you're looking for making little fixes as you get closer to publication day. And then, you know, there comes a point an author tries to do his own, you know, publicity and legwork a little bit to kind of spread the word, but you know, there's a certain stage where it's just kind of, you just have to let it ride. You have to roll the dice and see what happens. And, you know, either readers respond to it and purchase it, and reviewers do the same and give it a you not only want a review, but you want a good one too.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, yeah, this happens. I mean, they're not people like, not every review is a stellar, you know, review, even in the New York Times. So, you know, you have all these stresses of how is it going to be received? How are the sales going to be? What kind of publicity is it going to get? And there's nothing you can do about it. At some point, you just have to just buckle in and enjoy the trip and try to start working on something new to fill that void so that you don't just, you know, stare at an algorithm and stare at numbers all day. Yeah.
Which you'll be doing shortly.
Oh, I'm sure I will. I'm fortunate my son's soccer season starting, so I'll have plenty of things to distract me and
oh, good. And that's good.
Yeah. I've already started you know, making notes as far as, you know, the next issue of Scoundrels, which I'm really excited about. Thinking about some of the content that we've already got developed and how I can make some revisions to that to better help it flow with Under a Hard Sun into the next issue, SD2, whatever we end up titling that, subtitling that. and going a little more beyond characters, you know, actually, you know, I'm thinking about this. I'm coming up with, some stats and descriptions and ideas of, you know, bestiary, animal life on the planet Diluvia, and maybe the planet Unov, or not Unov, no, Buey, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there is more than just scoundrel people in this setting. There is animals, creatures, man, alien wildlife that will come into that the characters could come into contact and conflict with. New types of starships, new types of just gadgets and weaponry that might be unique to this place that, you know, gamers, referees, and players alike won't find in other systems, other gaming systems, but that can be used because it's Cephas, can be used with the Scoundrels universe. Can we call it that? Can we call it the Scoundrels universe? Can we start?
Or just the Scoundrelverse?
The Scoundrelverse. Can we do that? That's I like that. I like that a lot.
It's like the Snyderverse. It's the Scoundrelverse. Yes.
Okay, but better.
But better than the Snyderverse.
But with a plot.
Yes.
Can we do that? But with a plot and not a lot of flashy throwaway special effects. Can I get away with saying that without making people mad?
Yeah, I think we can do this.
Okay. All right.
Well, thanks for coming on, Adam. I really appreciate that. I think we got a winner here. We just now have to wait for it to materialize.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a winner. Like I said, you can walk away from this, man, as a project creator and hold your head high. I'm absolutely positive of that. This is a decent product. And the only thing that's next is just to wait till launch day and bring it to life. I mean, the zine it's written, it's ready to print, it's ready to, you know, shipping's going to go unless the printer industry self-destructs. There should be no issues with this thing. And, you know, the PDFs are ready to rock and roll. So, yeah, people will get this. You know, they won't have to wait long to get their hands on it. Hopefully, we just got to bring it to life.
Right. Yeah. We're just ready. It's ready to go. So, you know, once the Kickstarter is over 2 weeks, then it goes to backer kit. And then once the backer kit PDFs will be going out then we'll be shipping shortly after that. So.
Well, it was a joy to work on. It really is. It's been a real privilege to sit and write and immerse myself in the Brixton system.
Well, it's been a pleasure having somebody on board to help. I really appreciate it, Adam.
And thanks for having me on the podcast, man. I love rambling with you.
Hey, good. I agree. Take care.
Okay, man. See you now.
So I think what I'm going to do is
are we off?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to. Yeah.